We had a very busy Thursday, May 16th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We began updating listeners on how the state's U.S. House delegation voted on a key immigration bill. Only a Bridgeport blogger, Letty Grimaldi, stopped by to talk about the coming November battle for the 22nd State Senate District. And Connecticut Inside Investigator, reporter Mark Fitch, dropped by to talk about how some of the state's wealthiest taxpayers could be affected by a proposed rollback of the Trump-era tax cuts.
Sometimes things happen that you know, my happy little listeners out there, you and a lot of people aren't tuned into because you actually have lives. You're busy working and shopping and, you know, hanging around with your family and getting things done and going to school and getting ready for graduation. And I feel it's partly my job and other people who do shows like this to keep an eye on stuff and present it to you so you can better understand and use that stuff to sort of dissect, if you will, why things are what they are. And I go back to the fact that, and again, more polls have come out over the past 2 or 3 days. I go back to the fact that a lot of people say, well, my God, how can Donald Trump be tied with Joe Biden when Joe Biden obviously loves America and Donald Trump wants to destroy America and he wants to be the next Hitler, yada, yada, yada. Well, we can debate that ad nauseum, but a lot of times, in fact, all the time, the president or the presidential nominees of either one of the two major parties is reflective of what that party stands for. And in the case of Joe Biden and in the case of his party and in the case of him not doing anything about the border because he doesn't have the spine to. There was a vote yesterday in the House that involved all five, obviously, of our House members. And this is a perfect illustration of why, whether you want to believe it or not, there are people who would prefer Donald Trump be back in the White House. I know I've got friends of mine who say, and I'm not saying I'm voting for Trump this time around. Don't get me wrong there. But I have friends of mine say, oh, my God, you're in the business. Why do you think people actually want Trump back? Well, a lot of times I point to stuff like this. I tell my friends, both professionally and in the family and among the circle of people I hang out with which admittedly is limited, I say, you don't have to look far for people to say, yeah, Trump ain't a Boy Scout. Yeah, January 6th was bad, but I don't want Biden and I don't want Democrats. And I don't know, it's too bad I can't make that more plain to you, but let's take this. 148 House Democrats vote against a bill to deport migrants who are convicted of assaulting police officers. Again, 148 House Democrats who vote against a bill to deport migrants who assault police officers. It's called the Detain and Deport Illegal Aliens Who Assault Cops Act. Now, it was passed by the House. In fact, I can give you the totals here. The final passage in the House was 265 yeas or yeses, 148 nays or noes, 17 people didn't vote. Now, the Republicans voted in this bill 211 to nothing to pass it. 54 Democrats sided with Republicans on this to deport, to boot illegals if they're convicted of assaulting a police officer. But the problem is, 148 Democrats said, no, we shouldn't do that. They voted no on this. And you're probably wondering, how did Connecticut's Democrats vote? I'll tell you. Three of our Democrats, remember, we have five Democratic House members. Three of our Democrats voted yes on this bill, so they are in favor of the Detain and Deport Illegal Aliens Who Assault Cops Act. The three yes votes, Jim Himes, 4th District, Joe Courtney, 2nd District, Johanna Hayes, 5th District. So again, Johanna Hayes, Greater Waterbury, Jim Himes, Fairfield County, Joe Courtney, eastern part of the state, 2nd District. They apparently have some common sense. But they are in the minority on this one. They, Congresswoman Johanna Hayes, and Congressmen Jim Himes and Joe Courtney, they were three among the 54 Democrats who said, yes, that's a good idea. If you are convicted of assaulting a police officer, you should be bounced from the country, detained and deported. However, 148 other Democrats voted no on this, including Rosa DeLauro from New Haven, 3rd District. And I'm looking at the roll call vote right here. In fact, I'll scroll down and I'll make sure I get it right here. Let's see. Let's get to the D's here. Rosa DeLauro, Democrat, Connecticut, nay. And John Larson, another fossil. Democrat, Hartford. Let's scroll down to the L's here. Hey, Larson, Mr. Larson of Connecticut, nay. So please explain to me. And again, this is why you people out there probably know people who are voting for Donald Trump or who will vote Republican, because they see a lot of Democrats as crazy, nuts, whacked out when it comes to dealing with immigration. And why? How about this? Migrants charged in an attack on a New York Police Department cop or cops in Times Square offered plea deals. Plea deals. Six of the migrants charged in connection with a vicious attack on two New York City police officers in Times Square were offered plea deals Tuesday, as a Manhattan judge revealed that one of the accused cop beaters was arrested again while he's out on bail. By the way, is the White House doing anything about this? Or is Joe Biden just busy trying to figure out what day it is? What color socks am I wearing today? 24-year-old Yohenry Brito, who was remanded after his initial arrest, was nabbed last week for petty larceny after an activist Brooklyn priest posted a $15,000 cash bail. By the way, you can be a priest and still be crazy. There are a lot of crazy, deviant priests out there. Judge Laura Ward said in Manhattan Criminal Court on Tuesday. She said, quote, I am furious that Mr. Brito was rearrested and charged with petty larceny while he was out on this case. She fumed as she warned that another slip-up would land him behind bars. Oh, Judge, you mean an illegal who shouldn't be here in the first place, who has now committed two crimes, allegedly. Now, oh boy, ooh, if he commits a third crime, oh boy, then we're going to get tough, yeah. And you wonder why people are voting for Trump. You wonder. Seriously, you wonder? Meantime, as I said, a bill aimed at booting illegals out of the U.S. if they assault a police officer passed the House Wednesday night. The bill passed 265 to 148, but two of those no votes, two of our members of Congress here in Connecticut, Rosa DeLauro and John Larson, we don't have to boot them from the country. If they're convicted of assaulting a cop, let them stay here, because, of course, all they want is a better life. The bill would require illegal immigrants to be detained by federal authorities until they can be deported. It would also create a new category for migrant inadmissibility, specifically dealing with illegal immigrants who were accused of assaulting police officers. This comes after recent instances of illegal immigrants attacking police have gained national attention as the country continues to grapple with the ongoing illegal immigration crisis at the southern border. By the way, you know who also voted on that? The House Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries. So all of you people out there, and I talk to them from time to time, and you call here, oh, my God, how are people, how, dear Jesus, is the country, is this thing tied between Joe Biden and Donald Trump? Well, a lot of people are ticked off about something. Now, thankfully, Joe Courtney has some common sense on this. Apparently, Congressman Jim Himes has some comments on this. And Congresswoman Johanna Hayes, in a tough reelection battle against George Logan of the 5th District, she's got, common sense on this. But again, two people, two well-entrenched Democrats who apparently, like their boss in the White House, worship at the altar of illegals, say, nah, you're accused or you assault a cop. Nah, you can stay in the country. Folks, it is mind-boggling. And I ask you again, please point out something the White House is doing on immigration. And frankly, I'm not surprised, but it just makes me laugh when I hear people say, oh, my God, how is Donald Trump tied with Joe Biden? Well, when you have an issue that millions of people are paying attention to, and your guy doesn't do anything about it, what do you think people are going to do? What do you think people are going to do? So again, just write this down in your notebook for November. Joe Courtney, Jim Himes, and Johanna Hayes all say yes. If you assault a police officer and you're an illegal, you should get the boot. But for some reason, I don't know what the reason could be. I'm not going to sit here and expound on that. John Larson and Rosa DeLauro say, hey, why not? Hey, you assault a cop. It's no big deal. Oh, my God, how are people voting for Trump? Well, there's your answer right there. My God. Arlene in Trumbull starts us off. Arlene, how are you?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I listen to you every day, Paul.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. I agree mostly all the time with
you. Okay.
But when we're talking about assaulting policemen,
yeah,
what about if they even assault a regular person?
Well, yeah.
Rape someone?
Well, yeah.
I mean, get them out of here.
Yeah. Well, you know, apparently a lot of Democrats say no. They're Arlene, they're just here for a better life. Don't
no,
you know
no.
that?
I don't believe that. I don't believe it.
And Arlene, they wonder why people are voting for Donald Trump again. Well, here's a perfect example, is it not?
Right.
I don't know, Arlene.
Either one, we really don't have a big choice this time around.
Well, yeah, I wish there was.
I would never vote for Biden.
I wish, and Arlene, thank you for the call. Yes, I wish there was a different choice, and Arlene, thank you. But I'm just pointing this out. People get angry. Well, you know Trump. Yeah, they may say, listen, I don't love Trump. But what is, I ask this over and over again, and I still haven't gotten an answer. What is the White House doing about illegals? And now I'm reading another story today. Again, there's more Chinese nationals coming into the northern border. And what's Joe Biden? He's trying to play tough guy. Hey, Donald, I hear you're free on Wednesdays. Come on. It's embarrassing. Lenny Grimaldi, of course, the guy in the blog, onlyinbridgeport.com. Never a dull minute in and around the Park City. Lenny, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Isn't it great to be us?
It is.
I mean, it is.
It is.
Right?
Every day is different. Great. Everything is unique. And, it's one of the great things about the media business, reportage, you know, in general. No 2 days are exactly alike. No.
The city that never disappoints for its politics strikes again.
Marilyn Moore says she's had enough. Lenny, she's 75. She made the announcement, last week we were talking about this. So what happened Tuesday at the nominating convention on short notice?
I mean, exceptional gamesmanship by Trumbull politicians. So this is a diverse district. We talked about it. It's arguably the most diverse district in the state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
A third of Bridgeport, all of Trumbull, a piece of Southern Monroe. So Marilyn Moore said, I did my 10 years, I am done. So what you had is, so you have a field that includes former Mayor Bill Finch, who represented the district for 7 years before he was mayor.
Yeah.
Right? And you have Sujata Wilcox of Trumbull. She's a law school professor at Quinnipiac. And you have some local operatives, you know, on the city council and otherwise. And so the Trumbull delegates came to the convention and said, you know what? The best chance for our Trumbull candidate is to make sure all the Bridgeport-centric candidates qualify for the ballot. Hmm. So the way it works in this process, you need 15% threshold, parenthetical, 9 votes of support.
Yeah.
Convention to qualify for the ballot. So all the Trumbull delegates showed up supporting Sujata Wilcox, but they made sure once she had the 15%, they threw all of their votes behind the Bridgeport-centric candidates. So now you have a five-person field, and the best chance for a Trumbull candidate to win the state Senate is that equation. So Sujata Gadkar Wilcox is definitely in the game. So I see her and former Mayor Bill Finch, as the leading candidates to win an August 13th primary in a five-way field.
What about the Republicans here? Any shot? Who do you think will likely be their nominee? Have they settled on one? What about the state GOP in this whole thing?
That's a great question because, you know, not clear what they're going to do because, you know, they have an opportunity here. But
yeah.
You know, they do. I mean, I think about Rick Torres in Black Rock. You know, he's popular there. I'm not sure Rick wants to do it. If they'll even come up with somebody. But, you know, it's becoming harder. So usually when the Republicans can pull off a win, it's not the presidential. It's the gubernatorial cycle.
Mm.
Because the presidential turnouts are so large. You know, and you have in Bridgeport, the turnouts are much
yeah.
larger. So it's usually when it's more the off cycle, the governor cycle, where the Republicans can do better. But it's so wide open right now. I don't discount anybody in this field because it's so weird and bizarre. It's really a question of there's only 3 months, actually a little bit less than three
yeah.
months. So how many of them will seek the public money to qualify? So Connecticut's Citizens Election Program of publicly funded races will allow the candidates to receive $110,000.
Wow, it is that high now. Wow, that's a lot of money.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now you've got it's a very labor-intensive process where
yeah.
the candidates have to go out and raise about $18,000 of small dollar donations.
Mm-hmm.
The limit is like $350 per personal donation. If they get there, however, they got a bunch of money to spend in a really diverse district. So, you know, some of them may go for that immediately, or some may say, you know, I'm going to bypass the process in such a, you know, in this compressed, you know, timeline. But, there are a couple of people I see as leading, but I don't dismiss some of the others. You know, depending if they raise the money, boots on the ground, you know, messaging. I call mm-hmm. mom, money, organization, and messaging. You know, that's what it comes down to.
There you go. The Lenny Grimaldi, by the way, the guest, only in Bridgeport.com. This Ernie Newton versus Heron Gaston race, also interesting here, as Ernie Newton is Ernie Newton.
Yeah, it's advantage Heron Gaston. He's the incumbent. There were dueling conventions going on at the same time.
Yeah.
I had a live feed of the 22nd convention. The multiple district Bridgeport, Trumbull, and Monroe. So I wasn't able to go to the other district. That was taking place, which is the 23rd, the adjoining 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
So Heron Gaston is the incumbent. Ernie Newton held the seat 20 years ago until he received an involuntary vacation courtesy of the federal government.
Voluntary vacation.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
All right,
yeah.
Let's keep going.
All right.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all right.
So So Ernie Newman came one vote short of qualifying for the ballot, one vote short of the convention support. So now his other option is he's going out into the field. Mm-hmm. He must now secure signatures from 15% of Democrats in the split district. It's about two-thirds of Bridgeport and a piece of Western Stratford to qualify for the ballot. Not an easy task. But even if he gets there, he's going to drain his money because you're going to have to pay people to help you get the signatures.
Yeah.
And so Gaston is going to have a huge fundraising advantage. So, you know, Gaston's incumbent. He's the leading horse. But it's Ernie. You never know.
Well, Lenny, when you talk about, and you mention this all the time, and I've heard about this, paying people to help you get signatures here, petition signatures, what does that cost? Where do you find people to do that? And generally, what does that cost the candidates?
So you're talking about, they're called canvassers.
All right.
And so, you know, basically you're paying a canvasser, depending on the campaign, its resources, you know, maybe $15. $20 an hour,
all right,
something like that, to go out and secure signatures. And so they're petition sheets. They knock on doors and saying, hey, so-and-so is running to get out on the ballot. We really would appreciate your support. Please sign here. And that's how it works. And in the okay. old days when you had a lot of political discipline and volunteers, it was a lot easier. But today you don't have that discipline so much anymore. And so now it's like, if you have an army of volunteers, God bless you, do it. But
yeah.
most don't have it anymore. You have to pay people to go out in the field, knock on doors, and get the signatures.
Got it. All right, the couple of minutes we have left, you know who, your Trump dump here, your old boss. A couple of things here, Lenny. Give me your feelings on A, how the trial you think is going, and B, the supposed debates we're going to have here.
Okay, so the key witness, Michael Cohen, he's
yeah.
still in the stand.
Mm-hmm.
I think the government did a really good job, you know, pointing out this is not a perfect human being, right? He's got a lot of baggage, lying in the past. And so I think they kind of laid some groundwork of credibility, especially with the witnesses in advance. You know, on cross-examination with the defense, you know, they're pulling him apart a little bit. He's maintaining his composure. You know, I've been there, I've been on a stand in these kinds of cases, so I know what it's like.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, I think he's a little bit beat up, but there's a cure. So there's going to be redirect from the government to try to cure
sure.
some of the things.
Sure.
Again, I think this case is really simple to figure out. If the jury believes Michael Cohen is telling the truth, Trump is toast. If they don't, he's acquitted.
But we always have the possibility that even if somebody thinks Trump is toast, they may say, I'm not going to vote that way to start, you know, another civil war. Maybe. I've heard that from prosecutors here.
Yeah, it could be. But, you know, if he gets reelected, we might have a civil war. You never know.
All right. And now these debates, you know, when I saw a June debate, Lenny, and I know the Biden people are saying, well, it's because of early voting. Or is the cynic in me, Lenny, viable enough to say, or they want to answer a final question as soon as they can? What do you think?
Well, I think it's good for Biden. You know, Trump has agreed to do it. Will he change his mind? I think there's only an upside for Biden and only a downside for Trump. You know, right now Trump's doing pretty well in the polls, in the battleground states.
Mm-hmm.
But if he does this, I don't see an upside for Trump because it provides Biden an opportunity to relive January 6th.
Yeah.
Talk about all the times he's been charged. And if the first one is CNN, you know that stuff's going to come out. And the person who's more likely to say something stupid is my former boss. Right? So why do it? If I were advising my former boss, and I'm not anymore, I would say don't do it because there's nothing in it for you. There's a lot more in it for Biden.
So why is he doing it? So, Lenny, why is he doing it? Has he been told, hey, they're asking you to do this because you're ahead and they're desperate? Is that why?
No. So no one's making this decision for Donald Trump. He's made this decision right now to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He could change his mind. I mean, if I'm advising him, I'd say don't do it. And just say, is stacked against me. Everything media-wise is stacked against me. That's why I'm not going to do it. But if he does do it, also if he takes the stand in this case, huge mistake, he's going to get ripped up, okay? So same thing in a debate. There's no upside for him. Only an upside for Joe Biden. He's got so much more advantages, especially – so Biden's going to be up there really appealing to suburban women in battleground states.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is going to help – it's going to help clinch a victory if he gets there.
All right. The website only in Bridgeport.com, Lenny Grimaldi, the guy Lenny. Thanks, and we'll speak with you next week. Have a great weekend, my friend. Thank
Absolutely.
You. All right, buddy. Thanks. There you go. Bringing back a buddy of ours, Mark Fitch, one of the reporters and driving forces behind the site Inside Investigator at InsideInvestigator.org, one of the great sites around the state now that really take an in-depth look at a lot of issues and breaking news and stories around the state of Connecticut. Mark, it's Paul here. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Well, great, Mark. Great to talk with you once a month or so. I see this story here that you wrote among the stories you have at the Investigator now. The end of the Trump tax cuts could mean $3,300 more in taxes for Connecticut residents. Now, this is still about a year and change out. If you're assuming that he loses, if he wins, things might not change. But where do you come from these? Where do you get these numbers, Mark? And who might this affect the most?
Well, you know, just to caution everybody, these are all hypotheticals. Anybody paying attention to what's happening in Washington and the presidential campaigns can surely understand that, you know, none of this is set in stone, obviously. Mm-hmm. But these numbers come from the Tax Foundation. It's a nonprofit based down in Washington, D.C. And, you know, they did up the numbers for every state. If the Trump tax cuts, which are set to expire at the end of 2025, were to go away completely, this is what it would look like. And they broke it down, interestingly, by congressional district. And so in Connecticut, what we saw was it ranged from about $2,200 to $2,500 in most of the state, except for District 4, which I believe you guys are down there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah. So in down in District 4, it bumps up to about $7,169 in increased federal taxes. You know, one of the criticisms of the Trump tax cuts was that it, you know, really benefited the wealthy. Well, there's a lot of wealthy people down in that part of the state, so they would see by far the biggest increase. And this is all Joe Biden, President Joe Biden has his budget doesn't actually eliminate all of the Trump tax cuts. It eliminates a lot of them for the upper class, for, you know, people making over 400,000, billionaires, closing tax loopholes, things like that, but maintains much of it for the rest of the middle and working class, and then adds on some things like, you know, increased child care or increased child tax and increased earned income tax credit, things like that. But I thought it was an interesting thing to point out.
Yeah, a couple things here, and I know from reading this story and from dealing with this issue, Mark, previously, and you have obviously too, at least part of the focus on this, is it not, is what they call the SALT deduction, the deduction for state and local taxes.
Yes, so that was a big deal when it hit in 2018. Governor Malloy and the legislature scrambled to create a workaround because the Trump tax cuts capped how much of the state and local tax deduction you could take. They capped it at $10,000. Now, that would affect people with, you know, really big houses that pay more than $10,000 in state and local taxes. But it also affects businesses because we tax business, you know, things that businesses own as property.
Mm-hmm.
They receive a property tax. So the legislature, you know, to its credit, created this really kind of complicated workaround called the pass-through entity tax. It's now become one of the, you know, premier revenue sources for Connecticut. And it was, you know, basically a business would be taxed at the corporate rate and then credited back 93% of that so that they'd end up being taxed at the personal rate. The legislature almost immediately lowered that 93% to 87.5. It got the business community very worked up, and it, you know, and they were, and honestly, it was a nightmare for their bookkeepers to try to go back and redo all this stuff. But you know, it's the salt cap workaround has been holding strong since 2018. If that goes away, if the cap goes away, it'd be interesting to see how Connecticut would react to that, or how businesses would react to it. You know, would they go back to claiming, you know, the state and local tax deduction, or would they stick with the pass-through entity tax? That remains to be seen. And there, you know, so far as I can tell, there's nothing in Biden's budget that looks to eliminate that cap. So we'd have to wait and see on that one.
Mark Fitch is the guest from the Connecticut Inside Investigator site. And Mark, you know, you talk about the 4th District with this tax issue or any other tax issue. I mean, you and I can remember in the, you know, the state tax department. I mean, back when George Jepson, I think, was the tax commissioner, you know, any changes, Mark, that happen either on the state level or the national level, you know, there's always this little handshaking, this little trepidation of, oh my God, if we just lose, you know, one or two of these big hedge fund guys or gals in Greenwich or Stamford or Darien or somewhere in Lower Fairfield County, you know, heaven forbid they go down to the Carolinas or they go to Florida. You know, for some of these folks, if two or three of these people leave, and I've tried to explain this to people, that's millions of dollars in tax revenue potentially lost to the state.
Oh, it's huge. And we've lost plenty of those massive, you know, billionaires, Petterfee and Paul Tudor Jones. Mm-hmm. You know, they all decamped for Florida, which is kind of becoming the new, you know, oasis of, you know, hedge funds.
Yeah.
But we still have plenty of money, you know, plenty of people keeping their money here. But yeah, that you lose one of those major hedge fund guys, one of those billionaires, they can fold up their laptop and go. It does have a huge impact on the state of Connecticut. However, you know, since this is dealing with federal taxes,
yeah,
they can't really escape that. So I don't know that it would really affect their business decisions, other than the fact that maybe they'd say, hey, now that I'm having to pay this,
yes,
higher federal tax,
exactly, right, yeah,
I want to go to some place with, uh-huh, less than my state taxes. I mean, that could certainly play a role.
Because that's how those people, Mark, a lot of them, you know, they didn't get, what's the old phrase? Billionaires didn't get to be billionaires by wasting money, right? Or not protecting their money, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, Connecticut does try, you know, at least as of late, especially with Ned Lamont in the governorship, you know, playing that cautious role and, mm-hmm, saying, no, you know, because there's every year there's calls for taxing,
oh, yeah,
the wealthy in Connecticut,
yeah,
more, every single year. And he's pretty much put the kibosh on that, and, you know, actually managed to lower, you know, taxes on the middle and working, mm-hmm, class. So he definitely has that more, you know, Greenwich business mind to him. That drives some other groups nuts, including members of his own caucus.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, if that were to change, if the calculus were to change under a new president, a new federal budget, it could mean some changes here in Connecticut if people try to get people try to lower their tax burden by decamping for some place with no state income tax. That can hurt.
Absolutely. Check out the website, insideinvestigator.org. This story here, end of the Trump tax cuts could mean $3,300 more in taxes for Connecticut residents. Always great to have Mark Fitch on the program with us. Mark, thank you. We appreciate the time, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks, Mark.
Hey, thank you, Paul.
All right, appreciate it. Mark Fitch there, insideinvestigator.org. The end of the Trump tax cuts could mean $3,300 more in taxes for Connecticut residents.